Accession number 17543, Reel 3.
Mr. Fenton, Reel 3.
Yeah.
Now, before we started recording, you were showing me some documents.
Mm. Mm.
There were documents which you got on the squadron, 102 squadron.
Yes.
And you said you shouldn't have had them, but you've taken them away, and they're now in your
possession.
Can you tell me what the documents are to start off with? No, don't get them out now, because...
No, I'll just look at them.
The rustling of the paper will make a noise. Try not to make a noise.
These were your flight plans, and you had a flight plan on your navigation sheet, which gave you the... tracks which you had to use to get to your target, and the times that you're on the target, the courses that you had to fly, and then of course the return journey, which was in reverse, as you might say. It also had what the Met gave you, the wind velocities you were supposed to use. But when you did get to you must remember that the information the Met people got was very sparse in those days. They obviously didn't know what was going on the continent, and they weren't always accurate. So you, as a navigator, had to work out your own wind velocities, and these were the crux of how good your navigation was. If you got the wrong wind, your navigation was all to pot, you know what I mean? And if you came, for example, they would tell you, they'd brief you before you went and say, we think there is a front from, shall we say, Mannheim down to Zurich or somewhere like that or whatever. And if you knew that was there and you had to go through it, well, when you go through a front, the wind directions change completely. And if you're not on the ball, you could be flying all over the place. If I can just retrack, when I was a station navigation officer training, you could lose aircraft that flew over the country. They missed the whole of England and flew off and just crashed in the Irish Sea or somewhere. That's how bad navigation could be with people. Because people, when they got up there, some of them just froze, you know. Everybody didn't think clearly when they got up. There was quite a bit of panic with some people, you know. And whilst you'd trained them on the ground to do these things, when they got up there, it sort of went haywire with them. See, and I've lost one or two crews when they were training, and when you backtracked on the navigator, you found out that it was mainly navigation trouble that had caused the problem. You know, I mean, driving aircraft is, with all due respects, I mean, it's all there. It's fairly simple, but to do the mathematical calculations, and you'd got all sorts of shall we say, machines like G, you've heard of G possibly, strobes, that where you had to work this. You also had you use the stars for astro. There was quite a lot to it, really, you know. And you'd got to be on the ball. You couldn't just go to sleep for a moment. I used to take tablets before I went to keep me awake, to make sure that one of my fears is that I would fall asleep, because the drone of an engine, you'd be amazed how it sort of lulls you into a sense of easiness and that. And I used to take these tablets just to keep me on the ball, you know.
What kind of tablets?
There were a tablet that made you keep awake, you know, to keep your system, shall we say. I don't know what they were. They were little white tablets, but they obviously had one or two of those to make sure. Because sometimes the tension when you got to a target was terrific for all the crew, not just me, for everybody. I mean, there was everything being shot at you, not just you personally, but the whole area was covered in shot and shell. And if you got caught in searchlight beams, if they coned you in a searchlight beam, you had to do what they called evasive action and dive and all sorts. Well, this didn't help your navigation, you see, and you might come out quite the wrong side of a town, and you'd have to set up your navigation principles again, what we call dead reckoning, and start from scratch again. But as long as you got away with it, you didn't mind very much.
Now, you were telling me that on these flight plan documents, that the there would be an attempt to advise you about how to improve
by
comments written.
Indeed.
Can you tell me about those comments that would be written?
Well, yes. There was always like a station, a squadron navigation officer who was in charge, excuse me, of all the navigation side of it. And each crew, as they came back, you had a navigation officer, you had a gunnery officer, you had a pilot. All the sections had the various officers in charge. Well, in the nav section, you'd have to go and sit in with them, and they'd go through your log and that. But I'm jumping away here. I think you should know this, that when you came back after an operation, immediately before anything happened, you were debriefed. You were taken to a room, and they had all these intelligence officers there, and they went through your log with you, you see, and they debriefed you as to the whys and wherefores of the trip to see if they could pick up things. Because there were things like, for example, you saw flashing lights which were flashing and things like that, and they'd want to know whereabouts it was, and they formed their own sort of master boards with all these various things on so that they could brief other crews, you know, what to look out for and that. And you were debriefed on each and every one on his own particular job, not just me as a navigator. Everybody was asked questions. It was all debriefed like that. And then, of course, you went off and you had eggs and bacon, which we all look forward to. But these, they did put remarks on in the early days. I was told I was a bit stupid and I didn't know what I was doing, but towards the end they said, not bad. I think it was because there weren't many of us left.
What specific advice might they give you to improve that?
Well, with the instruments, you see, you could do what they call G-stooge. That won't mean a lot to people who don't know what I'm talking about. But you could use this machine, and without getting up from your seat, you could track yourself, because you'd get various fixes which would tell you exactly where you were. Now, what happened? What happened was, as soon as you got over the English Channel or the North Sea and you went into enemy territory, i.e. Germany or France, they blocked the blips on your instrument, and it was just a snowstorm. So therefore the machine was no good to you. So therefore, if you'd relied on that, you were completely and utterly lost. So you used to have to rely on what we called your own personal dead reckoning navigation. And this is where you used other things like astro. You used the stars and things like that. You would you'd means of getting fixes from the stars as well. But they never liked you to rely on one form of navigation. You had to keep two or three forms going, you see, so you didn't get lost.
You're saying that you're frightened when you're doing raids, but were there people who just couldn't take the stress?
I did meet up with one or two that were called LMF. I don't know if you've heard of LMF, have you? Lack of moral fibre. But there were very few. On the whole, everybody did the job, and I don't know, I mean, air crew seemed to be a fairly happy-go-lucky bunch, you know, because, as I say, it was this team spirit that really welded you together. That was the thing, you know. And it was a great feeling.
What symptoms did the one show who had the LMF?
Well, they used to, a lot of them broke down in tears, and they just couldn't stand up to the pressures, you know. It was It had just got to them.
What was your attitude to them? Did you feel any sympathy or not?
Well, it was one of those things that you just accepted. Oh, well, you know, hard luck, and you got on with it. You didn't really give it a lot of thought, because, I mean, you could have possibly talked yourself into a similar situation if you hadn't. But there were very few of them, I must admit, there were very few of them, but there were some, you know.
Did religion play any part, as far as you personally were concerned, in the war?
Well, on the squadron, you always had padres. You had a Church of England padre and a Roman Catholic padre, usually. And they played a big part as far as morale and religious things were concerned. But there just is one thing that sticks in my mind, and I can remember just before crews were taking off, when they were in the dispersals getting ready for takeoff, the Roman Catholic padre would come in and he'd have a sort of a little altar book, like a Bible, which he would open up as an altar. And I've seen these Roman Catholic chaps get on the knees and he would give them a blessing before they would take off, and this became a ritual. They wouldn't take off before they had this blessing given to them. Otherwise, there was no pressure on religious backgrounds. I mean, I'm Church of England myself, but all I know the padre for, he was a good lad when he was drinking, and that's all I could say about him. There was just another episode in my life which concerns the Roman Catholic padre. At the time, I was going rather strongly with an officer at the time, a Roman Catholic officer. I didn't know she was a Roman Catholic. And one day the padre came to me and he said, would I like to go to his billet and look at all his vestments? And he showed me all these vestments, which I must admit were very ornate and very good. And then we sat down and had a quick whiskey, and he turned around to me and he said, what are your intentions with this young lady? So I didn't really understand what he meant, so I said, well, just have a good time, you know. Anyway, the following day when I went into the mess, this lady WAF officer cut me dead, and we never spoke to each other after that, and that was the end of the episode.